to the second case of the morning, Falkenberg versus CB Tax Franchise Systems, appeal number 09-1874. And we have Mr. Dupree.
May it please the court, my name is David Dupree. I represent the appellants, the plaintiffs in this case. There's a substantial factual dispute about whether the parties to this franchise arrangement entered into a contract which included choice of law, forum selection, and arbitration clauses. The case was filed in the state court and removed by the defendants to the Southern District of Illinois, after which the defendants filed a motion to dismiss on the basis of the forum selection clause, a judicial motion, not an arbitration motion.
The defendants say on page 7 of their brief, quote, that you were involved in, quote, obvious forum shopping, close quote. And how did it happen that this case is filed in Madison County, Illinois? Everybody's from Missouri. Defendants are from Texas.
One of the five franchises, there was only one alleged purported franchise agreement, which has a lot of moving parts, but there were five separate franchises under the agreement, one of which was located in Alton, Illinois, which invokes the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act. The defendants traveled to Alton, Illinois, and specifically approved that location, and the plaintiffs operated that franchise shop in Illinois until the arrangement fell apart. So Illinois clearly has a connection with this case. Venue was proper, jurisdiction was proper, there was nothing wrong with filing it in Illinois, and the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act clearly applies, which, by the way, also renders void the forum selection clause on which the district court granted dismissal. The facts about the Illinois location...
The other side argues that the arbitration clause is the important clause here, not the...
Well, that's a late argument. That comes out. By the way, the defendants first moved to dismiss on the basis of the forum selection clause. The plaintiffs responded they never agreed to the forum selection clause. And by the way, even if the contract has a forum selection clause, it's void and unenforceable under Section 4 of the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act. The defendants responded the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act does not apply because the plaintiffs are residents of Missouri. The district court bought that argument and dismissed the case on the basis of the judicial argument of the forum selection clause. On appeal, the defendants acknowledged their argument before the district court was wrong because Section 6 and 26 of the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act clearly apply. Section 6 deals with fraudulent and deceitful representations in selling franchises. Section 26 provides for a remedy of damages and or rescission. And Section 6 specifically provides that it applies for franchises to be located, are located in Illinois, irrespective of the residence of the franchisees. So on appeal, the defendants acknowledge that their argument before the district court was in error. They argue that there's a factual dispute about whether they sold a franchise to be located in Illinois. Now, it's interesting that while they're arguing on the arbitration issue that we have a clear-cut contract which clearly defines all of these matters, they say that, well, it's the contract didn't describe any locations, and we never approved a location in Illinois. But the undisputed facts established by affidavit of the plaintiffs and not controverted by the defendants are that the plaintiffs selected a location in Alton, Illinois. The defendants, through their franchise manager, Sharon Katteen, personally visited that site on November 12, 2007, and approved it. That's undisputed, not controverted, I should say. Not only that, but Colbert Ball had a website, and they had an Illinois page, even though they weren't licensed to sell franchises in Illinois, not registered. And on the Illinois website page, they listed the Alton, Illinois location, and we attached a copy of that website to the complaint. They don't dispute that. So there is no serious factual dispute. They sold a franchise to the plaintiffs to be operated in Illinois. On appeal, they contend, well, there's a factual dispute about that, and the trial court erred in dismissing because he should have resolved that factual dispute. And if there is no Illinois franchise, then the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act would not apply to void the forum selection clause. That's their argument on appeal. But they were quite content to accept the district court decision dismissing the case on judicial grounds. They did not cross-appeal the district court decision denying the motion to compel arbitration, and yet argue to this court that this court, in the first instance, should resolve these factual issues about the parties really, whether the parties really agreed to the arbitration clause and the forum selection clause, and whether or not those clauses, if they were part of the agreement, would violate the Bremen versus Zapata standards of overreaching and fraud on the forum selection end, and on the arbitration end, whether there was waiver of the right to arbitrate. In order to get to the arbitration issue now, the plaintiffs have to successfully appeal the dismissal of their case on judicial grounds. There's no case to tell that there's no waiver by the time you get there, although the plaintiffs have submitted in their reply brief, since the issue of asking this court to decide all of these issues in the first instance when they were not decided by the district court was raised in the defendant's brief on appeal for the first time. The plaintiffs have suggested that it would be inappropriate for this court to decide all of those issues in the first instance, and we've cited about four or five cases on those standards, which is that a hearing on these factual disputes by the district court would be of minimal value to the court, and the outcome of these factual disputes are clear. And not only are there factual disputes, but there are legal issues to be decided from those facts, whether to compel arbitration, whether the parties agreed to arbitrate, whether there was a waiver of the right to arbitrate.
If I could interrupt for a minute and focus on the arbitration clause issue, because I do think it's in the case. It was raised as an alternative basis for the motion to dismiss below, and it's properly before this court. It really, in my judgment, is a simple legal issue because it was included in the contract. The contract was signed, and there aren't facts to be resolved about its enforceability because there is no allegation of fraud that's particular to the arbitration
There is
clause itself, and as I understand it, you're not arguing that you were fraudulently induced to enter into the franchise agreement as a whole.
Well, the Prima Paint case versus Flood deals with raising fraud as a defense to enforcement of the arbitration clause, Judge Sykes, and that case says that the fraud has to deal specifically with the inclusion of arbitration, the arbitration clause in the agreement, and that's exactly what we have here, and that's exactly what we have argued both in the district court and in the court of appeals.
What's the fraud?
That the, well, the facts are that the, and these are outlined in the brief and in the record, that the plaintiffs bought five locations. They were sent a UFOC to one of the plaintiffs who signed for it and skimmed through, and it says nothing about arbitration and the bold print on the front about risks or the table of contents. After Mr. Falkenberg had seen the first few sections of the UFOC, he telephoned Colbert Ball and asked about the financial terms, and they said, we can revise those financial terms. We'll send you a revised proposal, which they sent to him with a cover letter saying, here's the revised proposals. They changed the financial terms, and they sent a business plan, which outlined how to operate one of these franchises, one of these tax service franchises. The plaintiffs considered that to be a revised proposal. They then paid the reduced amount. They then located five franchises, and Colbert Ball came up and approved them all. They then went to Texas for the training. And right before a training session, they were handed four or five pages and said, here, sign these. And at the same time, the Colbert Ball people were trying to pressure other franchisees at that session to backdate checks and sign things of that nature, so that all the plaintiffs were handed was four or five signature pages, which supposedly now, according to Colbert Ball, apply to like about a 100-page franchise agreement. The plaintiff signed just those pages. They say nothing about arbitration, forum selection, or any of that. They were not given copies. They were not given a complete copy of the agreement. And in fact, 4 or 5 months later, when they asked for everything they had signed, they were not sent an integrated contract in which supposedly those signature pages had been added. They were just given their signature pages.
It seems to me that if you sign a signature page to a contract without asking for and reviewing the whole contract, that you assume the risk that there's going to be something in that agreement that's adverse to you. That's not fraud.
There has to be
a
meeting of the minds, and what was...
Right, but if you sign a contract without reading it, you're still bound by it, and it's not fraud.
The issue is not whether you're bound by an agreement that you signed without reading. The issue is what they were given to sign, which they believed was the revised proposal, which makes no reference to arbitration at all.
Right, but that's a risky way to enter into a business proposition.
I would submit on Colbert Ball's and Judge Sykes that it's not an appropriate method to shove 4 or 5 signature pages in front of somebody while you're pressuring them to get into their first class and say, sign here, either.
Why did they sign it? A signature page without the full document.
Why did they sign it?
They thought they
were signing is what the revised proposal that had been sent them. And I'm submitting to the court these are significant financial or factual issues which are unresolved by the district court, in which the district court said these can be resolved by the court in Texas. In addition, on the arbitration issue, we have a waiver issue if the court decides to decide that issue here in the first instance, which in order to get to the arbitration issue to be decided by this court, the plaintiffs had to successfully appeal an adverse judicial decision dismissing their complaint on judicial grounds, not on arbitration grounds, before they even get to the arbitration issue. And by any standard, including the cases both parties have cited, Sheriff versus Wellness is one of them, that would be a waiver. This case differs from Sheriff versus Wellness because in that case, the motion to dismiss on non-arbitration grounds, on judicial grounds, was not granted or requiring an appeal on the judicial grounds before you get to the arbitration issue. The fact that the parties contractually agreed to arbitrate was not in dispute. It is in dispute here. And in that case, the defendant cross-appealed the order denying its motion to compel arbitration. In that case, as a side note, Judge Evans wrote the opinion, and Judge Duryagin was a district court below. See that I'm into my rebuttal time. I'll save the rest of it for rebuttal, if I may.
You may. Thank you, Mr. Dury. Mr. Fink.
May it please the court. The core issue before the court is to determine, is there a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the plaintiffs assented to and agreed to the written franchise agreement? If they agree to the franchise agreement, the district court's decision below is correct. The case should have been dismissed from improper venue. The reason being, the franchise agreement contains an arbitration provision. The arbitration provision requires arbitration in Houston, Texas. Under this court's decision in Continental Casualty from 2005, when you have an arbitration clause that designates arbitration to take place outside of the district where the district court is sitting, the proper remedy is to grant a motion to dismiss under Rule 12b-3. So the district court below got it right, albeit for the wrong reasons.
And you preserved both alternative grounds for dismissal, the forum selection clause grounds and the arbitration clause grounds?
Yes, Your Honor. It's on page 59 of the record. It's from page 9 of our motion to dismiss. This is the first thing we filed in the case. The initial argument was on the forum selection provision. The alternative argument was on the arbitration clause. So I don't see how a counsel for the plaintiffs can say we waived this issue when we raised the arbitration clause in our very first motion with the court. Now, the evidence as we see it, and it's not really what the evidence we submitted, it's the affidavits submitted by the plaintiffs confirm that there is no genuine dispute that they agreed to the written franchise agreement. They admittedly received the offering circular in, I believe, late September, early October of 2007. The offering circular had the standard franchise agreement attached to it. Inside the standard franchise agreement, in section 14.2, in capital letters, is the arbitration provision that we're seeking to enforce here. The only thing that the plaintiffs sought to change was the amount of fees they had to pay, and that was agreed to by Colbert Ball. They ultimately signed the receipt for the offering circular. They came down, and at some point they signed several pages, which they admit. They filled out these pages, these documents. They dated them, signed them, put in their names. All these pages come from the standard franchise agreement that was provided to the plaintiffs along with the offering circular. This argument that they were signing pages for a, quote, revised business plan makes absolutely no sense. Their revised business plan is Exhibit F and one of the affidavits. I don't have the page numbers in front of me here. But if you look at that, Exhibit F is an email from Colbert Ball to the plaintiffs just saying, yeah, we agree, we're going to charge you a reduced franchise fee.
Was that the only real dispute here, was the amount of the franchise fee?
That was the only thing that was really negotiated, from what I understand, was the franchise fee, and it was reduced to $25,000. And you had an email, that's part of the plaintiff's Exhibit F, is an email confirming that. Then you have the promissory note, which originally is a part of the franchise agreement. It's a form note, doesn't have the dollar amount filled in. And so that's sent in their Exhibit F, and all of a sudden it says, okay, it's $25,000. And then the third document in Exhibit F, this business proposal, is a business plan for a Colbert Ball franchisee in New Jersey. And it's just showing ideas how to make the plaintiff's franchise successful. It's obviously not an agreement. There's nothing in there about the terms of the franchise. There are no signature pages. None of the pages that the plaintiffs admittedly completed, dated, and signed in their own handwriting are found anywhere in that business proposal or anywhere in Exhibit F.
My question is, did the revised proposal change in any way the franchise agreement?
No, and there's no evidence that it did. The only thing that was changed was the franchise fee.
Did it replace the franchise agreement? Did it become a new franchise agreement?
Well, no, it didn't. I mean, you have to have a written franchise agreement, and the only written agreement that was ever circulated between the parties was the standard franchise agreement that Colbert Ball provided to the plaintiffs as an attachment to the offering circular.
Which included the arbitration clause.
Which included the arbitration clause. This business plan that they're latching on is simply it's just not an agreement. It's just information on how to run your business. So based on that, even though the district court gave the wrong reason for dismissing the case, ultimately what you're looking at is its outcome. Did it reach the right outcome? Its outcome was to dismiss this case for improper venue. This court has said that you can dismiss a case for improper venue when you're relying on an arbitration clause that requires arbitration outside of the judicial district where the case is being heard. So in the end, the court got it right. And if there are any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll sit down.
Thank you. Mr. Dury, you have 2 minutes.
One of the defenses raised to the enforcement of the arbitration clause, if this court decides to decide that in the first instance, was that its inclusion in the agreement under these circumstances would be unconscionable. And Illinois law applies on that. So that's the case of Perry versus Thomas, U.S. Supreme Court case, footnote number 9. And Illinois law is very clear. After the briefs were filed, I cited to the court Timmerman versus the Grain Exchange, decided on August 21 of this year, 915 Northeast 2nd, 113. Razor versus Hyundai, Wigginton versus Dell, and Kinkle versus Singular, all of which provide under the Illinois law there is a sliding scale on unconscionability with respect to both procedural unconscionability and substantive unconscionability. And if this court decides the arbitration issue in the first instance, it would also be required to decide that defense that was raised both in the district court and in the Court of Appeals. The arbitration issue was not raised in the initial motion to dismiss filed by Colbert Ball. Its initial motion was strictly on judicial grounds, and that's the motion that was granted.
How can an arbitration clause in a franchise agreement be unconscionable under Illinois law when the Illinois franchise law explicitly permits arbitration? How can that possibly?
The inclusion of the case that was just cited to the court, Timmerman versus the Grain Exchange, dealt strictly with procedural unconscionability. And in the sliding scale, that was sufficient without any substantive unconscionability. In this case, the agreement that they provide says nothing about arbitration anywhere. It's buried in the fine print and in the attached agreement, which was never signed, or at least the plaintiffs never understood they were signing that. The revised proposal that was sent to them, and they believed that they were signing, did not include arbitration, forum selection, or choice of law clauses. I see my time is up.
Thank you. This case is taken under advisement.